Are we allowed to enjoy this?
Keane O'Mahony is literally an opposition scrum half's nightmare.
People say I refereed lots of matches when I actually played.
The Red 78 with Alan Quillen and Niamh Briggs. Subscribe to the Rugby channel on the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications now.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.
Now, you're very welcome back. So, great news for Connacht and great news, I think, for our next guest. Jack Cardy has signed a 3-year deal at the province and he joins us now. Jack, great to have you on.
All right, Joe. Apologies for the headphones are a bit dorky, but they'll do.
So, congrats. I guess we say congrats about something like this, right? This is a good day in the Cardy household. 3-year deal?
Yeah, delighted. Maybe at the time last year I was probably uncertain just with everything in terms of where I was and if I was going to get back into the Irish selection or the Irish fold. And to be honest, even before I'd got in, I got back in there the week before last, I had a decision made, and it was a really easy one just with exciting things happening off the field, but then in terms of the way that we're playing and the enjoyment I'm getting with it, and then along with kind of stuff with my family and stuff as well, it was a pretty easy decision to make, and I'm just delighted I'm able to. Well, Connacht obviously had the faith in me to give me a 3-year, and then just to get it done so early was great.
So where were you a year ago then?
Look, I suppose loads of different things. COVID, I suppose I didn't know whether I was going to get back into the Irish kind of reckoning or not, and then I suppose it was a thing with COVID, there was only kind of 1-year contracts out there, so I kind of backed myself that I'd get back into the frame. And I suppose what kind of changed was just kind of seeing the players that we've brought in, the makeup of the squad, I suppose the plans for the next 2 to 3 years, and then I kind of said it yesterday, it's probably been the most enjoyable part of my career. I feel in terms of definitely in how I'm able to express myself on the field, it's given me, I suppose, a new lease of life, and I've kind of gone away from being one dimensional and kicking, and I feel I'm able to have a variety of different things in my game now where maybe I didn't have a couple of years ago, and that's a credit to the coach and staff that's came in and kind of changed a lot of the stuff that we've been doing.
Mm. So post 2019, what conversations are had with you, for instance, about Ireland? Does Andy Farrell sit you down and say, look, this is what I'm thinking going forward, you're not going to be a part of it initially, or you're not going to be a part of it full stop, or I need you to go and work on X, Y, and Z, or how does all of, or maybe there's no conversation whatsoever, maybe the squad's named, you're not in it, because on the outside, it was very much presented and discussed as, well, Jack Carty is going to be the unfortunate scapegoat here for some of the performances in the World Cup, fairly or unfairly. So curious to get your perspective on how it all played out post-2019.
I think a lot of people, and probably a lot of goes back to 2019, I think what it really was my form when I probably came back after the World Cup. I actually thought I relatively did quite well in the opportunities that I did play. And I know the Japan game, I think, I thought I acquitted myself quite well. Maybe fell off a couple of tackles, but I think probably what let me down was maybe my form when I came back against Leinster, Montpellier, Gloucester. Faz has always been an open book with me. And I'm not naive or a fool of myself in terms of when I wasn't playing well, you're not going to be expected to get in. So, it was more so after, I think that's where the level of consistency or performance went down. I wouldn't necessarily, I know kind of people like to think that maybe it was the Japan game, but the way I kind of see it, I acquitted myself quite well. And it was kind of the performances when I got back to Connacht that kind of maybe damaged it.
Yeah, because actually, I mean, you'd be too probably humble to say it, but I mean, my memory of the first half in the Japan game is that you had some amazing kicks and did acquit yourself very well. Why did your form suffer, do you think, post-World Cup? Was it connected to some kind of World Cup hangover?
I don't think so. I think I'd spoke to Friendly about this for a while, or at the time quite a bit. I was nearly probably trying too hard. I'd been to a World Cup. There was a new head coach coming in, and I really wanted to, I suppose, kind of kick on. I probably had a period of 18 months previously to the World Cup where I'd kind of had such an intense build up to kind of trying to get to something that I'd probably build up to my whole career to try doing it. And then it was about kicking on after that. And then when I kind of, I suppose, almost felt it kind of falling out of my grasp, I try even harder and harder. And look, when you're doing that in any sport, I think that's when you're probably going to get yourself into trouble in some respects. So it wasn't until I started relaxing a bit more and enjoying it a bit more, that's when kind of, I suppose it was a lot more easier for me to put my best performance out there.
Did Andy Farrell say to you, Jack, well, by all means, relax and enjoy it more and get your form, improve your form as well. But did Andy Farrell give you any specifics? Because, you know, we hear things like maybe Josh van der Vleer was told, improve your carrying, and geez, you can see the man is transformed in that respect and is reaping the rewards. Were you told to improve anything by Andy Farrell?
Yeah, look, there was a variety of things. It was more of a kind of conversation in terms of how he wants his tens to play. And I suppose with the way I had probably gone into playing a certain way, because I would have played like that for a couple of years, I would have been, I probably wouldn't have been as much as a threat on the ball. And I probably wasn't holding defenders inside. And when you're doing that, I suppose it puts pressure on the players outside of you, the fellas who you're passing to, or end up getting kind of double, we call it kind of double bang, so they end up getting double hits off the opposition, which, you know, puts a lot of pressure on the fellas outside. So credit has to go to Mossy Lawler and Pete in who are kind of looking after our attack this year, and how they've, not just me but everyone across the board, how they've us carrying square. And that would be a thing you can see how the Irish attack has evolved in the last 18 months or last year in terms of the stuff that they put in. I'd like to think that a lot of it is quite similar to the stuff that we're doing here in Connacht.
Yes, get those hips facing forward type stuff.
That's it, yeah, that's it. There was times where you'd see the back of my jersey when I'd be passing, and look, it doesn't take an expert to realise if you're seeing the number on the back of your shirt when you're passing, you're not really going to be holding any defenders whatsoever. So that's been a massive thing for me, and it was I suppose at the start of the season and pre-season it was a massive change for me. But you know, as I said, credit to Mossy and Pete in terms of how they've managed to kind of drill it into us.
And had you been told about getting those hips facing forward as a young player?
Yeah, I had.
It's one of those kind of, you know, there's just one of those basic rugby things, I think, that is generally told to lots of young players coming through. It's obviously harder than it looks at times, or it's an easy habit to get out of.
I to be honest, it probably was a combination of things, man. Spacing of our players may have been a bit wider, so I felt I had to, you know, really rip the ball to get it into their hands early, and in turn then by the time I'd passed it, I was kind of facing backwards. But it's probably became a habit for me, and I suppose it wasn't until I became aware of what I was actually doing then that we were able to, you know, drill back into kind of staying a bit more square.
Mm. Can you feel yourself holding those defenders more now as you run square? You can sense them less inclined to move off.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I know it was a couple of games against the Bulls where, and he would have seen it without, like, how Johnny plays. He plays right at the line, and there'd be times where he'd be getting hit, like he'd be letting the pass off, and some fellas would just kind of come through and tackle him. And it was certainly happening in the New Zealand game, but that's the, you know, if you're doing that, you're putting other players into space. So that's certainly what you kind of intend to do.
Well, in fairness to Johnny, that would be one of the real signature images of his play that you'd have in your head, him running absolutely square at the line and maybe pulling a pass last second and taking a smack, and that seems to be the deal.
I suppose you kind of, if you're doing that, you know you're doing something right. And look, it is part and parcel when you play in that position. At 10, look, oppositions will obviously look, he plays to the line. If you get the opportunity to leave your shoulder in them early, that's what lots of teams will do. So it's one of the perks of the position, I guess.
How did you reach the point of relaxing and enjoying your rugby a bit more after the post 2019 World Cup dip, where you're trying too hard and things aren't happening? Does somebody say to you, Jack, you just need to loosen the grip and everything a little bit, or did it just happen fairly organically, or how did it come about?
A bit of both. I suppose it came to realization for myself that there's a lot more out there than rugby, was probably one of the things. Secondly, you know, I had an ability, or I was given an opportunity even to go away with 2 weeks off at Christmas, and I found that I just probably needed the break to refresh mentally, if anything. And look, there was a time where I actually went and played at 15 against Gloucester, and that was purely just to kind of get me back into rhythm of playing. And look, I've said it before, Friendy is a head coach. Like, we're very fortunate to have him. I won't obviously say, but there's things that he's done for players that kind of go above and beyond the line that you'd expect from a boss and that. So there's a lot of things there that I'm very fortunate to have him as a head coach like that.
Yeah, the fact that you're calling him Friendy suggests a certain closeness.
Yeah, it's not the gaffer or anything like that that they have in soccer.
I doubt you were calling, Schmitty was not a thing, I'm sure. So, and I was reading that you two have a good relationship when it comes to matters on the field as well. There'd be, often Sexton and Schmidt were talked about as being very much in sync. Would you get that feeling with Andy Friend?
Yeah, I would. And look, I think the thing is, I suppose it's he's well able to challenge me if there's things not up to scratch, which is what you want. Look, obviously there's the utmost respect for each other and we're able to have the normal conversations, but when I suppose things aren't up to scratch or performances aren't up to scratch, the Bulls games comes to mind. That's something that, there's a relationship there that he's able to kind of, tap me on my shoulder, or if I've maybe missed a kind of couple of kicks in the previous, he'll do it in a way where, it's a, how would you even say, it's a respectful way of doing it, but it's also, it's that kind of boss player, that relationship is there as well as the one of friendship.
So across this year, you get back to playing very, very well. And there are a ton of high points across the calendar year that we could mention. And I know in advance of the November series, lots of pundits that I talk to on a regular basis had you in their squad. Squad is named, it's Joey Carberry, it's Harry Byrne, it's Johnny Sexton. You're not named. What was your reaction?
Look, I won't lie and say I wasn't disappointed. I was obviously bitterly disappointed. It was... And it's not one of them things that you, at the start of the block, we kind of break the games into blocks. It's not something that you think from the very beginning. But certainly, as the games come to kind of the latter end, and when selection matters, it's definitely something that kind of comes into your head. And maybe that's something where I probably maybe need to change my kind of perspective on it. That it's a thing that you look at the whole block. But I won't lie and say I was obviously bitterly disappointed. But I kind of managed to get away with my parents. It was their 30th wedding anniversary, and that's something that I wouldn't have been able to do. And then I was fortunate enough to kind of get my face back in for the last kind of 10 days or so.
And would you get a phone call or an explanation from Andy Farrell when the squad is named or about to be named, or maybe that doesn't happen? I don't know.
No, it does. Okay. Yeah, no, I had a good conversation with Faz just before the squad was named.
Right.
And look, it can't be the nicest thing to do. I don't know how many players he must have to call. So it's one of them things, I suppose, you listen to obviously what he has to say, you kind of digest it, and then you kind of, well, certainly me, I kind of just take it. And then, if there's questions to have further on, then I'll do that. But yeah, look, I won't lie and say I was bitterly disappointed, but to get the opportunity then to get back in a couple of weeks later was... it was just even good to get back in and kind of see the different things that had been there since the last time I had been.
So when you were last in a big way like this and aspiring to get real game time, say 2019 under Joe Schmidt versus what Andy Farrell is trying to do in November, compare and contrast the demands on you as a 10, because it certainly looked very different this November to what had gone on before under Schmidt, and that's not to take away from his many brilliant achievements, but you're being asked to do different things, it's quite clear.
You can look, rugby has evolved definitely in terms of there's a lot more protection at the backfield, so there is invariably more space in around the pitch. So that's probably since the time that I suppose Joe has been there and since Faz has came in, rugby has changed a lot in that respect. So if you're getting your short side reload and teams aren't, I suppose, aren't covering it, you're going to take it. And then you could see in the last, across the board, all three games, is the ability to play to space. I think that's probably the main thing that I've definitely noticed as a change from maybe being there previously.
Okay. And so expand on play to space for me. I mean, it does what it says in the tin, I'm sure, but what does it mean in real terms for you?
Well, I suppose for me, it's first and foremost, if they're not covering the backfield. It means that, you know, if there's only one person in the backfield, it means they're going to have 14 defenders in the front line. So you're going to be sending your forwards and the boys into kind of down the gallows and into kind of brick walls. So if you find space in the backfield, then they'll invariably put two or three maybe back there. Lots of teams, you know, if you get a good short side reload, it'll mean that if they don't cover it, you take it. If they leave numbers there, or if they end up covering it, then you'll just play to space. So people kind of automatically think that, I suppose, space is kind of you're playing wide, but you could see with even with Joey's line break against Argentina, like sometimes space is kind of in between defenders because teams just like filling the field so much. So that his was case in point. He kind of got the ball out the back of a pot of three and then he just ended up going square and the hole came for himself. So, yeah, people kind of, when you think space, you think it's usually to an edge or to width, but a lot of times now teams are just trying to kind of space right across the pitch and it's nine times out of ten can be straight through them.
So a big part of your life is to scan very quickly and make decisions very quickly.
Yeah, but that's what I suppose you have your outside backs for there as well, because you're kind of preoccupied with the pace of the ball. You know, you're always pace of the ball, looking in the backfield if there's space, and then you're kind of looking out then as well to see kind of if they've got their full right or not. So that's when that kind of second pair of eyes really helps. And you can definitely see anyways from what I've had in Connacht. You know, Bundy's fantastic at it, as is Tom Daly, Sammy. It's something that we really work on. And it's just something simple as in, you know, on your reload, the coaches will hold up different kind of colour cards. You would, like a lot of teams would use it across the world, and it just kind of gets your eyes up to see where the space is.
Right, okay. So you were deciding on your future last year and then you've come to your decision now. Were many clubs in touch? Was there interest from England, from France? How many clubs? Who was in touch?
look, I won't go into names, to be honest. In terms of this year, look, I it wasn't even a thing that I wanted to look elsewhere out of, I suppose, respect and loyalty to Connacht, because as I said, the happiness that I've had, especially this year, and kind of the things I touched on is like a family business that I want to try get into. My parents, well, my dad is a bit older than my mum, but trying to push on and get involved in that is definitely something that I'd like to do. And, you know, I suppose this is kind of, you know, dreamy picture of what it's like abroad and what it's like to play somewhere else. And sometimes it doesn't kind of live up to the bill. So, yeah, I was really happy with, I suppose, how it ended up coming about. And I said, the way that we're playing, this was as a new stadium down the line. And then, as I said, the group that we have here is every bit as talented as the group as we had in 2016. So I think it would have been foolish to even have went looking. So I was just happy to get it done in the manner that, that I did.
Okay. What's the family business, Jack?
So it's a pork and bacon business in Athlone, but we also do marinades, herbs, rubs and spices as well. So yeah, it's definitely something now that I've kind of got into over the last couple of years, and hopefully you know, I'll be in there with some other siblings when the time comes is right.
And do you like what you've seen so far in the business world?
Yeah, look, I suppose it's daunting in some respects, because you're in and out. You kind of see how decisions are made in terms of, you know, I kind of always speaking to Dad in terms of when he's buying or when's the right time to buy raw material and when's not. And he's kind of like, look, it's a feel, you'll get it. And that was the thing that kind of, you know, I was always really aware of and kind of worried about, that I wouldn't be able to do things right. But, you know, it's kind of, there's good people in there. There'll be great people to kind of learn off as well, which, you know, would make the transition quite easy. But look, there's 3 years there to go out and even go into kind of similar sort of business and see how they kind of do things. So I'd like to think by the time comes, I'd have a couple of years maybe after the three, but we'll see how it goes. But I'm fortunate enough now, we've our down days on Wednesdays, so I can get back. And you know, I was down in Clonakilty the week before last with Dad, down in Staunton's co-op, and just to even see kind of how different places do things. It was he has a thing where he kind of likes getting up at cockcrow. So we were leaving Athlone at like 5:45, and we were back before 2:00, which didn't seem saying to me, but that's, I suppose, people of that generation do things.
Let's see, pampered rugby boys.
I don't know about that now.
The real world. So that's really interesting. That's where maybe 10, 15 years you most likely see yourself, as opposed to coaching or doing something else.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. The question probably gets asked a lot of lads, if coaching is for them or not. And at the moment, for me, I wouldn't see myself in it. I know, like, there's a couple of lads, like Jared Butler's doing the Galwegians ladies teams, and they're absolutely flying at the moment. Owen Masterson is with Corinthians, and there's a lot of other lads who are doing their coaching badges. But yeah, for me at the moment, it's definitely not something that, and it's no disrespect, it's just something that, you know, I don't think I'd have the passion for after rugby. And this is something, look, I really enjoy getting home and kind of seeing how the business is run and kind of the ins and outs of it.
It must be a lovely thing to be so happy at Connacht. Like, you've mentioned a few times, you've never felt happier, and you've got a great relationship with your coach, and there's exciting things happening off the pitch at Connacht as well. The brand of rugby you play is just a joy to watch. I think everybody loves watching Connacht, and that's been very much the case this season, even with, you know, the disappointing result thrown in at the sports ground, and you rebounded against Ulster. So, you know, people are very invested, I think, in Connacht doing well. It strikes me, it must be, you know, 29 and settled. It must be a nice age where you've got to grips with professionalism and you know yourself. And this seems like a bit of a sweet spot maybe in your career where you can enjoy it and perform.
Yeah, certainly, I think so. Something that we're definitely trying to do as a playing group is this, I suppose, we've players from different pockets of Connacht, Ireland, and then there's, you know, you've Leva Fafita who was away with Tonga. And I suppose what we're trying to do is kind of give fellas an understanding of what it is to be from the West of Ireland, or to represent the people of the West of Ireland, because it is something truly that is probably unique. And this is not me to try and sound cliche, it's something genuinely that we're interested in and learning more about. And I think if guys get an understanding of the people that they represent and kind of why they're representing people, the people, like, I suppose in any work or any job, you kind of, if you can have a collective buy-in to what you're all there to do, like, some players might be there for, you know, accolades, some fellas might be there to, you know, to progress or to get international caps. But I think I'd like to think that we're in a place now where the group is kind of coming to have a collective understanding of the whole province. And look, you can always, we're always saying that we want to win silverware, which we do. But I think if you have kind of strong foundations underneath that and a sense of the people you're representing, it's it makes it, I suppose, gives you that extra 2 or 3% that you need to kind of, I suppose, win games, but then also to kind of push on.
Jim Dempsey, watching on YouTube, says, great player, a joy to watch. Another Tom has texted in to say, delighted Jack Stain for another 3 years. And I have one from Anonymous, but I didn't quite know this. I knew you were a footballer. Joe, you do know that Jack made his Ireland debut for the under-15 soccer team with Jeff Hendrick, Matt Doherty, Robbie Brady. True?
That is true, yep, that is true.
That was a decent trio.
Yeah, it was kind of, and the three of them are obviously flying it now at the moment.
Aren't they, yeah?
Yeah, it is, yeah. We played against Holland in Home Farm.
What position were you?
I was centre-back.
Okay.
Centre-half, yeah. So now I played 5-6 games, 15s and 16s, and then unfortunately I didn't really have the touch or the technical ability to kind of kick on from that. I was more just kind of, you know, pumped the ball 50 yards. I would have done well if I was maybe born maybe 20 years before and Niall Quinn was playing up front, but certainly wouldn't be kind of getting into Stephen Kenny's team now the way they're playing.
Okay, well, you're doing yourself a disservice there, I'm sure, because I mean on a rugby ball, you can see that you played soccer. Whatever it is about the way you kick a ball, you can just see it's there. Beautiful strike of a ball. You look like a player who enjoys kicking a football.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think, I suppose, well, you'd see Dave Heffernan as well. He played a bit of GA with Ballina, or back in Mayo, and we'd be kind of getting into him because he thinks he's, an out-half stuck in a hooker's body. But yeah, no, we do. And there's always kind of, the lads play kind of golf rounders or kind of before skills and stuff like that, where they'll kind of pick different I suppose, holes to kick to. So no, I do really enjoy it. The feet sometimes can get a bit sore from kicking too much, but it's yeah, I suppose it's something that been from a combination of playing Gaelic and football. It's definitely benefited my rugby career.
So how many balls between out of your hands and then maybe off the tee practicing? How many kicks would you have a day at training?
Jeez, that's a good question. Well, Monday, because I kind of probably haven't kicked up to where I wanted to be, I'd say Monday I kicked about maybe 50, 60 balls off the floor, but it usually never would be. I'd only like to keep it quite low, so maybe 20 to 30 a day off the, or 20 a day off the ground, and then I wouldn't even know what out of hand would usually just be to warm up before you get into the real business.
Because there are obviously parallels, say, with place kicking off the tee and a sport like golf. And I know a lot of golfers, like Jack Nicklaus, for instance, would say practicing in the wind is not good for your golf swing. So I don't know, is practicing in the wind good, bad, and different for your kicking game? Because it can start to affect what you're doing, and then suddenly you're up in Dublin in the Aviva and the wind's not as Galway-esque, and it might impact on your technique. Is that something that's ever crossed your mind?
No, to be honest, it'd probably be the opposite. Eric Elwood would kind of remember one of the things he would have said to me initially when I came in, it would have been about that, the conditions that I suppose we're the ones who will be invariably kicking in it and playing it, that we have to use it to our advantage. I suppose for kickers as well, I remember kicking with Richie Murphy in Ashburn a couple of years ago, and there was this like howling breeze going like down the pitch. And I was like walking down like towards the goal where the wind was blowing towards, and he was like, no. So we turned back. And I suppose when you do have conditions like that and a strong breeze that we invariably do, I suppose it really does test your technique, because if you do get something wrong, the ball could end up going anywhere. So it does really enable you to kind of drill down the technical part of it, definitely.
No, I can imagine. A calm Aviva, by comparison, must feel like a joy. Listen, congrats. 3-year deal, staying at Connacht, and hopefully back in the Ireland fold as well in the months to come. Jack Hardy, congrats and again, and thanks for the time. Appreciate it. See you.
All the best, Josh. Cheers.
Cheers. That's Connacht and Ireland's Jack Carthy with us there. And our rugby coverage is with thanks to Vodafone, sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in. We have Rory O'Connor and Niamh Briggs on the way, by the way, after 8 o'clock.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. We all belong to the team of us.